Welcome to Amidon Planet. I'm your host, Joel Amidon. Thank you for joining me on this never-ending quest to learn how to teach better. Today on episode 89 of the podcast, it's a good one. We're not only talking about the book, Talking to Strangers, What We Should Know About the People We Don't Know, that book by Malcolm Gladwell. We're going to talk about that book, but I'm also going to get a chance to have a conversation with a recommender of that book, my mentor, Joe Dye. And so Joe recommended this book way back when in a previous episode of the podcast where we're just talking about just kind of reflecting on some years. This was deep in the pandemic, almost 2 years ago. And Joe mentioned this book, Talking to Strangers by Malcolm Gladwell. I'm a big fan of Malcolm Gladwell's work. We've featured Malcolm Gladwell's podcast, the Broken Record podcast, which he does with Rick Rubin. We've talked about that podcast multiple times. I've read many of his books. Hadn't read this book yet. It was recommended by Joe again in that podcast episode. It took me 2 years, but I purchased it and finally read it, but then thought about, man, there's a lot of implications here for teaching. And obviously Joe saw that. That's why he recommended it and invited him back on the podcast to have a discussion about the book. So just glad for that opportunity. Glad that Joe was willing to come back on. And yeah, we get into it. And again, if you don't remember, and you don't have to go back and listen to another episode, I would recommend you do. We talk about some of the things that he's taught me about being a teacher. And again, if we had to power rank the influences on me and my abilities as a teacher or my beliefs about teaching, Joe Dye is the number one draft pick in that power ranking. And so that episode, we call it a recorded teaching celebration because he used to have written learning celebrations. So already some of you are like, wait, didn't you talk about celebrations before? Yeah, we had an article that I wrote about celebrations, and that's again all influenced from Joe Dye. So again, I'll put links to the show in the show notes from those previous episodes, either talking about celebrations or my previous episode with Joe Dye, where he recommends this book. But he's pretty important to me. And so one of the reasons I wanted to start this podcast, and I'll say it again during the podcast, is I get to share the golden nuggets. And I had an article in the NCTM's MathMax Teacher Learning and Teaching Pre-K through 12. I had an opportunity to share an article where I talk about sharing the golden nuggets, right? And which is like people throughout my life, if it's people like Joe Dye or getting to talk to people like Glory Latson Billings or Rico Gutstein or my dissertation advisor, Anita Wagger, or just all these people in my life that have poured value into me. And I call them like they've been giving me like golden nuggets of wisdom. And even from my students, I get these golden nuggets of wisdom. And it's like one thing to get those golden nuggets, but it's then what do you do with them? Do you just hoard them? Do you just keep them to yourself? But I started this podcast so I could share the golden nuggets. And that's kind of what we get to do today. So having a conversation with Joe about this book, because I'm excited about talking about the book. And again, if we're going to talk about the book, we might as well, hey, let's record it and share it on the podcast. So then other people can hear to this conversation about the book. And maybe that convinces somebody to go get the book for themselves, because I think Gladwell does a really good job of putting ideas together, especially thinking about this idea of talking to strangers, which, man, kind of right now in the world, we need to figure out how we can talk to people we don't know. You know, that's kind of an important thing. So it's a good thing to talk about. So we have that, but then also I get to share some of the wisdom of Joe Dye, because I've been a beneficiary of it. I know I used to have him come and talk to my methods classrooms because, again, I wanted to share his wisdom. Now this is just another way I get to do it, and that's through the podcast. So let's not delay. Hey, by the way, just a quick disclaimer, and you know what I'm going to say, is if we're going to talk about this book, in no way are we going to cover the whole value of the book. And even if we do, it's from our perspective. You're going to want to take this and read this book and digest what Gladwell has to say from your own perspective as well. Because again, there's lots of good stuff in there and we can't touch it all. So basically, if you like what you hear, go get the book for yourself. We talk about going to your independent bookstores that are nearby you. You could also go to your library. Go support your libraries. I was thinking about that the other day. Like, I love my library here in town. Go support your library. Go. You can, if they don't have it, you can probably suggest it and they'll get it for you, right? And so, hey, support your library, support your local bookstores, and read more. How about that? All right, enough delay. Here we go. Here's my conversation with Joe Dye on Talking to Strangers, What We Should Know About the People We Don't Know by Malcolm Gladwell. Joe, how are you?
I'm good. Thank you very much, Joel Amadon. How are you?
Not too bad. It's only been just under 2 years since you last were on the podcast. So, and during that episode, you recommended a book, and I'm like, hey, let's do it again. How about that?
Yeah, it is. You know, not everything gets better with age, but here I am 2 years later.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think on the last episode, I mean, I pour accolades on you, but again, there's not a day that goes by that I don't think about some of the lessons I've learned under your tutelage. Only together for what, 6 months maybe? Yep. If that, yeah. Mm-hmm. And but I think about it a lot, and so then when you recommend a book, and so you recommended Talking to Strangers, What We Should Know About the People We Don't Know by Malcolm Gladwell 2 years ago, I immediately went and got the book, and then have finished it in a timely manner just a little under 2 years later. So, and I'm like, that kind of tells you where I'm at in my timeliness and reading. But I think also too, it takes a while to digest this stuff. So
it does. And I also think it tells about the world that we live in. There's many demands on our time as educators, not unlike our learners having many, 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 many demands on time as learners.
Yeah. Yeah. So what, I mean, when you first read the book and then, you know, talked about it and like recommended it, like, what was it about the book that stood out to you? Why this book?
Well, and I'm not going to mix any words about it. The thing, number one thing that prompted me to really be intrigued by the book was early on as a teacher, when I first started at Menasha, I got to be pretty well connected with the folks in our guidance department. And I thought, boy, you know, they're in there. And I would see Jack Vandenbogart, and I would talk to him on occasion, and he would have conference with a student or whatever. And the bottom line is, I thought, you know, the one thing that was missing for me as an educator was the ability to connect with students. And at that time, it prompted me to pursue my postgraduate work and to get my master's in counseling. And my motivation for getting my master's in counseling, without a doubt, was to be a better listener. Because I think we all hear the content and standard and curriculum-based discussions that transpire between ourselves and our learners. But I'm not sure that we hear the untold stories. Mm-hmm. And that prompted me to start to do some things as a classroom teacher. And I kind of held them as a standard for myself during my entire teaching career.
Yeah, I think that always stood out to me when you talked about getting your master's degree. Because, I mean, like, you did it in counseling. And then also then to see that within your teaching about how, I mean, you think about some of the, I mean, well, we experienced 9/11 together, and seeing how you handled that situation, just, you know, in thinking about what does the student need, not why do we react, but what do my students need? And that listening, you know, you're listening and seeing, and like, what do they need in that situation?
And I no longer have smart board but I was smart notebook, but I recall vividly, you know, doing certain things with kids on the entry level day. And it might have been framed around, write a short paragraph. And that's how I kind of framed it, was to write a short paragraph about your experiences and the hats that you wear. And I don't know if you remember us doing that. Uh-huh. And because I know this, that for Joe Dye, the educator, Joe Dye, the teacher, Joe Dye, the coach, Joe Dye, the father, Joe Dye, maybe the parishioner, Joe Dye, the customer, we all wear different hats. Mm-hmm. And the more hats that our students put on, the more weighed down in some form that they become. And I think, and also you talk about 9/11 and the experiences and how hard it was for learners and educators all together at that time, and not let alone for our country. But we have some things that go on even today via the COVID pandemic, and think about how that's affected our learners. And so I think that there are things that affect kids, and we need to let them express themselves about it. And the thing that amazed me, Joel, and I'll be honest with you, is the things that students started being willing to share. And I mean, and we used to have the kids go up to the smart board, slide a hat on it. This is my hat for being a sister. This is my hat for being a daughter. This is my hat for being a caretaker for my grandmother, or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. Because when those cheeks are in our seats, our students might have all that going on, and we're not mindful of it unless we give them an opportunity to frame a conversation about it. And that's why when I look at Gladwell's book, Talking with Strangers, I would hope that students that were in your class or my class would come back and say that we were never talking with strangers, because I think we need to break down those walls and have the best level of intimacy and discussions that we can have with our kids that they're comfortable with. And here's a case in point. And I know it's not related to Gladwell, but it's related to how we handle things in the classroom. My wife and I recently got new blinds in our house. Okay. And I was blinded by the price, literally. Okay. But the bottom line is, when we were at this particular store, the owner said, one of my salespersons is here, and she had you in geometry. And I said, and she came over, and I remembered the girl vividly. And this, Joel, I have to tell you, it's 30 years ago, easily, and maybe 40 years ago that I had her. She says to me, I still owe you a thank you. And I said, why is that? She says, do you remember the time that we were taking the test and you were walking around the classroom and you saw me and I had a cheat sheet out for one of the theorems that we were proving? Because 40 years ago, we weren't talking about applications and real world situations so much. We were making sure that we were driving the theorems
home. Oh, yeah.
Okay? So two column proof. And she said, and I was scared to death. And you know what? It had to be like on my first or second year at Parker. I was only about 6 years in. And she said, I didn't know what I was going to do. And she says, I was afraid that you're going to say something in front of the whole class. She says, but you know what you did? And I knew what I did. And she said, later in the class, you said, number 12 is going to be a free question for everybody. So just give it your best shot. So she said, you communicated to me and you never, ever called me out in front of my peers. And this, I'm not lying to you, 40 years ago, this 40 years ago in a month right now that it happened, literally. So, I mean, so everything that we do as facilitators in the classroom, it determines the level of safety that our learners feel. And in the world that we live in today with mental health focus, I don't think we can afford to have teachers talking to strangers.
Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, like, think about the opportunity you had there where you could have come, I mean, and we can see examples where someone could be completely crushed, their relationship with math gets destroyed, and like, and maybe that just makes them more sophisticated than their abilities to try and get answers into a test versus like you saw, this is someone that's desiring to be successful, maybe not the best method to do it,
But for sure.
And then, but then communicating, I see you, it's not going to be a difference on this, but you know, hey, let's try better next time. Right.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what we all hope, I think.
Yeah. So, I mean, the impetus for this book and the scenario of, the tragic story around Sandra Bland and, you know, she was driving, just got a job, was pulled over in a small town in Texas. And then the exchange that happening that's being caught completely on a dash camera between her and the officer, Brian Encina, ensues. Eventually she gets arrested by the officer and then tragically takes her life 3 days later. And then, so this is the struggle for Gladwell to understand, like, what's happening here? Like, what is going on? Not just to say, like, it's about one person or another person, but what is, like, the human condition and the society around this that could make something like this happen? And so it begins, it's like the two end caps of the book. And so throughout, there's, like, several ideas or not ideas, some things that are brought up to try to bring some clarity to the situation and what's happening. And I thought it'd be interesting to see, and like we were talking about slightly before we hit record, is like, there's lessons to be learned from teachers, from educators. 'Cause when we're talking to, a student, the brand new roster that comes in and first day of school, a lot of times we're a stranger or they're a stranger. And how are we going to do, how do we do that? How do we do that well? And so there's lessons to be learned here.
Well, and I agree with you wholeheartedly there, Joel. And I think, and as you reference, there are several walks in this book where there's things that totally start out as strangers. And what is the driving force about the dynamics literally that transpire after this interaction with strangers begins? And I always marveled about this when I was early on in my teaching years. We, just like you said, when the class rosters come out, and sometimes hearing it from Marvin Gaye and those persons that are in our department, and we're hearing it through the grapevine. Yeah. Oh, well, have you met Joe Dye yet? Or have you met Joe Hamadon? Wait till you get those two guys in class. They're complete, because there's information out there that we don't want to hear.
Right.
Do you know what I'm saying? I don't want my experience with learner A or learner B or learner C to be tempered by the experience that others may have had. Because I'd like to try and establish that relationship on my own. And as you said, the situation with the police officer and the girl getting pulled over in Texas, unfortunately, we have students in our world that live with that still today. I have a very good friend, he coached at Beloit High School, and he and I have had the conversation about him having the conversation with his children about what to do if they're pulled over for a potential traffic violation. And I can tell you that, in all honesty, my wife and I, neither one, have ever had a conversation with our children. So right. When I talk about, and that's why I think the first day activities that we do with learners, I think it's so important for us to build a relationship where kids feel safe. Write three things that, write a paragraph. And we did this as well. Write a paragraph about three things that help you to be successful and safe as a learner. And I'm amazed at the things that students in my class have written about. My mom's got cancer, my dad's got cancer, or my grandmother, and those things are affecting them as learners. And I had one student, Joel, and this is the gospel truth. This particular student wrote about how she's still scared because they had a person break in the house and her father shot the intruder.
Wow.
And that happened on the second day of my class that she shared. And those are things that I think we need to, when you come into work at Oxford, Mississippi, or play, because I think you do more play than you do work. That's just my observation.
Yeah.
Okay. But when you come into work, Joel, you have the ability to affect everybody that you interact with in a positive or a negative way, and building a level of intimacy.
So that kind of, jumps right into, the idea. I think the one that stood out to me right away is this idea of transparency. So then you're seeing maybe the girl that you're talking about who had this horrible incident happen within her home, maybe it's putting on a tough face, because if she didn't put that, she's going to burst into tears because she's scared to be at home at night, or she's falling asleep in class because she can't sleep at night because, scared of somebody breaking into her home. And so we see someone fall asleep. If we're not building relationship or we're not aware of that thing, we think, well, this person's being disrespectful, or, oh, they're just on social media or playing video games all night. And versus no, there's something deep going on here. And how do I respond, and how do I receive it?
Yeah. And I think you're absolutely correct. And how do we respond, and how do we receive it? And maybe more importantly, how are they responding to the way we're framing learning in our classroom.
I think the I don't know. I'm guessing you were a big Friends fan. That's my guess, yep. Joe. I like spent a lot of time just on the couch watching Friends every night, maybe just binging it. But no, I'm joking about it because in the book they talked about how Friends, you could turn off the volume on Friends and you could completely understand everything that's going on because everyone on the show is transparent. Like if they're shocked, they look shocked. If they're surprised, they look surprised. I mean, to us, like to or culturally, I guess to the masses, they look exactly the way you would think, like you would draw that emotion, right? The emoji, they match the emojis for those things versus like, that's not how life is, you know? And so that idea of transparency, like that everyone's going to be transparent in the way I would react to something is the way somebody else would react to something is, and they go through all these things, all these different examples, like Amanda Knox, she didn't react the way that people thought that she was going to react. And thus she got put in prison, even though the evidence wasn't there to that she committed the crimes that she was being convicted of or accused of. So like that idea of transparency, and it got me thinking about all the different, because I'll do that a lot. It's like, I'm trying to like assess faces in the class to see if people are confused. And I think sometimes like I'll look at someone and I think that they're confused, but I'm just like, they're probably just processing, you know, at times they're just processing. And like, I keep over explaining things and now I'm adding more to the processing. And it's like getting the beach ball on the computer and you keep clicking, you know, like, yep, like exactly. All I'm doing is adding more inputs and it just needs to process the inputs they already have.
Without a doubt. And I mean, and I think they can overprocess, you know, and kind of lose the ability to move forward in their processing. And that's why I don't think there's a doubt that the number one thing that you can do as an educator, you can be the consummate educator so far as delivering standards and helping students secure standards. However, I think the best thing that we can do is develop that ability to have upfront and honest communication with one another. And the Amanda Knox thing, okay, so now you've got a person that's in a foreign country, and so she's not exactly how to proceed, and I don't know that anybody would know how to proceed in a situation like that. Yeah. However, okay, how about the student that comes in, and there are so many things right now that, you know, educators are dealing with, and now this student comes in, and he or she happens to be a student of color, happens to be a person that moved to Wisconsin from the deep South and has got that Southern accent. And so their communication sounds different to other learners than the rest of the class. How do we help that student become comfortable with communication mm-hmm. with ourselves and their peers?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And so, and just being able to, you know, better understand who people are and who they're presenting. And it is about, yeah, building those relationships. And then like, well, you've already just demonstrated a couple of times with some of the activities that you do at the beginning of the class is like, I'm not going to tell you who I want to gather information. Like how can I get to know you better? So that it's not just you better sit and get sort of situation.
Yeah. I'm not a big fan of sit and get. And neither were you. And I think there might be a time and place for sit and get. Yeah. And that was probably in the early 1800s. However, you know, teach a man to fish, the whole story, you know. Yeah.
So the one thing that stood out to me too, is that when they started talking about the stress. So I was saying with like the keep adding inputs is going to, you know, make the processing, make the beach ball keep going and like going to add too many inputs to the situation. They talk about this idea of keeping adding stress makes things even harder to understand. It makes the information that you're trying to gather from someone. And unfortunately they were talking about like waterboarding and things like that, but adding stress to a situation and seeing like what kind of what kind of recall you can get or what kind of information you can get. It reminded me of another book that talked about, I think it was Successful. It's by Paul Tough, a book by Paul Tough. But it basically talked about like when, if a student is in a stressful situation, like a stressful home situation, kind of like the one you were talking about, like a lot of times they could, or they're even being bullied in school, they're going to digress to those like, fight or flight sort of situations. You know, like if you're attacked by a bear and you can either think you can fight the bear, you can run away from the bear. Both of them does not make a lot of sense. You're not going to outrun the bear and you're not going to beat up the bear, but you can try. But that's not like, there's not a lot of cognitive activity going on. You're more in response mode. And so thinking about that from adding stress to that situation into a situation where you're trying to, get what some students understand, and you keep adding stress to that situation, that cognitive ability just like goes to the basement. And I saw that, how you tried to create an environment where kids had the best environment possible to demonstrate their understanding. And it started, with the simple stuff of calling them celebrations of learning, right? Hey, we're not hiding anything. This is a test. We're having a test, but we're calling it a celebration. Let's celebrate what we've learned. So already, let's flip that around. I don't know. Did you even like, is that what that came from? Like trying to just, let's eliminate some of the stress there. And so like creating that best environment for students to demonstrate their understanding.
Without a doubt, Joel, because and I don't want to, I'll say it this way. I think there are sometimes that, students are their parents have a mindset, Joel or Jane or Joel are not, my children, they're not good math students. Mm. And too many times, we need to make sure we help kids filter out what they need to listen to and what they ought not to listen to. And what I mean by that is, my daughter or my son has test anxiety. Okay. So it goes right here, 100%. Eliminate the stress. Even when we talk about warm-up activities, and here we are, and we're up in the front of the classroom, and we're doing an entry-level thing at the beginning of the year or in week two. And I think it's important that we need to remember, differentiating instruction and curriculum is important, without a doubt, because we want to stretch all of our learners. However, when you teach your child to ride the bike, do you take them and put training wheels on and eventually transition to no training wheels? Or do you take them to the top of the hill and the path that runs through the apple orchard, no training wheels, and give them a push?
Yeah.
And I think that we all, and I'm going to go back because I think we want a safe harbor in our classroom. And if anything that we can do, and something as stupid as playing cool in the gang, when you transition to, whether it be formative or summative or anything we can do to eliminate stress. But the other side of that coin is, write three things for me that help you be successful and feel safe as a learner. I was amazed because, there's times in education where you want to listen to all learners, and some kids say, I don't like music going on in the background when I'm trying to learn. So find the middle ground so that you can serve the needs of all. And that's certainly a challenge today in the classroom with, I don't know exactly what it's like in the area where you're working, but I think there's a lot of conflict right now here in Wisconsin about the presence of the cell phone in the classroom, if you got your earbuds in and you're doing your work and you're listening to the music of choice, you're not infringing on somebody else's space. But I know there's a lot of discussion in multiple districts that are transitioning to no cell phones in the classroom.
Right. One of the most powerful tools we can have available to us.
Amen. Yeah.
We're talking here a lot about the Chat GPT, right?
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
And I can't imagine being where you're at, or even being in the high school right now with ChatGPT. I just cannot imagine trying to discern what's the best path forward.
Well, and maybe a little digression here, but just thinking about like when you first probably were like thinking about graphing calculators and, you know, or computer algebra systems, or, I mean, shoot, there's photo math has been around for a little while, you know, where people like, if you created a problem that could easily be answered through like photo math, which take a picture and it'll provide you the response. Mm-hmm. Like maybe you need to write better problems, you know, like, or there's a way to like assess those in a way that you can see, okay, do they understand how to do the arithmetic? Do they understand the, you know, the symbol manipulation and whatnot? But then also too, then can they extract that and apply it to a problem situation, which is outside of that technology that involves a higher level of thinking, but they can still use that technology to make sure that they're doing things appropriately, they're doing things quickly. I mean, on campus, we have all this statistical software that we can use. I remember when I first did my first stats class, the instructor had us do everything by hand. So we're calculating regressions and all that stuff, which is ridiculous now. Like, why would you do it? Like, you know, to do it to see like, okay, here's where it comes from. Now we can hit the buttons, right? And now can I interpret it like, hey, that there's no way that can be right because it should fall within this range, right? Or when my daughter gets the sine of an angle and it was in 95, not a fraction or not a decimal. Like I was like, something's wrong here, right? Like we figured that out. And so those higher, the technology just allows for higher order thinking to happen a little bit more quickly. And so I think that's the conversation, is think about how to use it well. And it was just the same thing for during the pandemic, when things happened, you couldn't just have people sit in front of and listen to an hour long lecture in front of their TV and do that over and over again throughout a day. And that would be their class day. Like, I mean, it became apparent, hey, that's just watching TV and it's not a very good program. Like, you know, if you don't make it engaging.
Exactly. And Joel, I couldn't agree more wholeheartedly with you about that. But the things that we've taken the pandemic, which was a horrific malady for our entire world. Mm-hmm. And we've now gotten to a place where there was a time, Joel, where she or he working from home would be unheard of. Oh, we can't do it. Just because that's the way something's always been done doesn't mean that bringing all 600 of our employees in at the same time is necessarily the best way to do it. And I think the outgrowth of that is today is that our students have become very good problem solvers. And there are a lot of problem finders in the world and we all encounter them. And I always used to share with my department colleagues that I'm not looking for problem finders, I'm looking for problem solvers. Yeah. And ChatGPT, may not be the preferred problem solver, but I think we need to recognize the power of ChatGPT and other sources of data gathering or decision making. And I think about my class when I was a grad student at UW Oshkosh and doing all my statistical analysis by hand.
Yeah.
And I think back and I go back because we just recently carpeted our entire house again. So we had to remove everything. So I'm finding things and I'm thinking, oh my God, I cannot believe all the hours that went into it. And now it's sitting on a shelf and it's worthless. So if I think what we really want is we want our kids to be problem solvers.
Yeah.
And to do it in an ethical manner. You know, and there's a time and place for ChatGPT and there's a time and place for the graphing calculators. And you know what? And you would have thought that graphing calculators were going to be the demise of math curriculum when they first came in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and that's the thing. Like, and people say, well, everyone's going to do this versus not. And I remember we used to have the debate in our methods class would be like, okay, calculators good, you know, like good or bad, like you agree or just, and people are like, well, they're awesome. Like, oh yeah. So use them all the time. Like, well, no, like, oh, so don't never use them. It's like, of course, and that's where the art of, you know, being a teacher and seeing, well, what are we doing? Are we trying to, you know, get past something where we want to like explore graphs and look at them and see what happens when you adjust different, different coefficients or constants within this graph and see what how's it move. Well, yeah, then it would be a shame to have to do that by hand, you know, versus like I can adjust some sliders even and see how, you know, it would work within a thing. So I can explore a lot more versus like, yeah, I'm going to be limited and only say like, you can never use it or you have to always use it. Like that's never the case. These extremes. That got me thinking about, so like the stress, you know, the stress thing being more elusive, but then that led to this idea, which is, I thought it was pretty important, of this idea of coupling. And again, I think one of the things that makes, you know, and maybe this is a critique, not a critique of the book, it's just, it was the book. There's a lot of heavy topics in here, from Jerry Sandusky to Hitler to Sylvia Plath committing suicide. I mean, like, and then even just the bookend of the Sandra Bland story. And so, but the importance of context, I thought, was pretty important to thinking about, you know, how do you, the context in which things happen is pretty important. And so they went so strong to have a quote of, wasn't the study of place or a study of the people, but more of the place that which something is happening. So I thought that was pretty important. Even thinking about the context in which I seen you interact with students and families. So out in the community, on the football field, on the track, and, you know, in the classroom, like those contexts would have a lot of differences happening in how students would either act or interact with you.
You know, and Joel, I could not agree with you more about that. But when I think back, and I guess probably the thing that, because I've read multiple Gladwell books, and I'll say this was my favorite. And the reason it was my favorite is because perhaps it aligned in so many ways with things that I thought that I did. Because as a classroom educator, I think we're all pirates. We try and find the best things and steal from it. And the best thing that could have ever happened in the classrooms was to have walls out so that we would not have, although there would have been an auditory intrusion from your neighbors. Yeah. However, the bottom line, sorry about that.
No problem.
The bottom line is, when I think about the coupling stories that Gladwell shares, it goes back to my hats, because the things, the hats thing, and I'm going to say, and I'll say with a level of pride, to my knowledge, I didn't steal it. It's something I decided to do on my own.
Yeah.
Because first of all, I'm a hat person. But more importantly, I have the student in class. Okay, so they're a freshman at Parker. That's one of their hats. They're a boy. That's one of their hats. They're a girl. That's one of their hats. They're a son. They work at Century. That's one of their hats. But all of those hats and the experiences that they have there, i.e. the coupling, their environment, that they shape who they are as a person. And to me, that's why I believe that the most important thing that we can do as educators is to give our students a safe place in the classroom where they don't feel like they're walking in with Attila the Hun or Cruella de Vil. I don't know that that's what Gladwell intended, but that's what I took out of it, that so closely aligned with how I do things.
Yeah.
And I mean, and at personal level, the Sandusky story, horrific on so many fronts. But myself and two of our staff members were at a clinic in Chicago, and he happened to be speaking. And we got a very weird invitation up to his hotel room. And the night that the news broke about Jerry Sandusky, John Colbert, my offensive line coach, he called me and he says, Joe, he says, did you just see the news? And we always kind of, you know, furrowed our brow and, you know, looked at one another, you know, kind of quizzingly, what was his motivation for wanting us to come up? But that's a whole nother level. But I mean, so that, I guess, talking to strangers, that's why it hits me on a personal level. But most importantly, because I think it's how I align myself as an educator. And I knew early on that I wasn't a very good listener, not listening to the level that I needed to our learners. When I look at John Stofflet, who's the lead news anchor today at WMTV in Madison, I mean, and he was one of my early on geometry honors students. And he came over as an eighth grader from at Menasha High School. And Janice McClellan is, she's a surgeon at the Marshfield Clinic.
Yeah.
And she was in that same group. So when those kids transitioned from Butamore Middle School to Menasha High School, and they're coming in as eighth graders, you know, and we all know that those, you have children, and your children are the most important persons in your life, your children and your family. And every parent wants his or her child to be successful. And I think that we should be the ally with the parents in helping them be successful.
Well, that just got me, like, when you're talking about the hats and you're talking about getting to know them and knowing the families and seeing them from different perspectives and seeing, like, and you would tell stories all the time about seeing people out and about and, like, where you see that student that might be struggling in your class or maybe just is like that quiet, but then you see them at Century bagging groceries. You can tell, like, they're the captain grocery bagger. And they got, you know, they're making sure everyone else is doing their job. Yeah. You could see, like, the you know, shift leader is like looking to them for some, you know, to do some extra tasks and things because they can count on them. And then, you know, you might see that they're not showing that same thing within your classroom. Well, okay, well, what is it about that? Is there like a lack of confidence? But like saying like they have the abilities and now seeing like, okay, so what is it about the context? Like, oh, like there's a lack of comfort. Like there's now I need to go in and look at, hey, what do they need to be comfortable and thrive in this environment? And maybe it is like, I like it. Like that student might not necessarily be leading in the knowledge of geometry part, but give them a leadership role. And now all of a sudden they're taking some pride in that. And now all of a sudden they're working a little bit harder to get at that understanding, you know, and just seeing like how those different contexts might play into how they are performing either as a doer of mathematics or just even in their other arenas around the school.
Without a doubt. I mean, and I look at, you know, to me, the self-esteem of young people. I mean, anything that we can do as educators collectively to facilitate the self-esteem growing for a young person, I would say the more the merrier, because I do believe that the world that we've lived in, and like you referenced before, you know, you and I happen to share 9/11 together. But I mean, I have just sincere concerns about the well-being of our learners via as an end result of how persons manage the pandemic. And there was no playbook on recipe or to follow when the pandemic hit.
Right.
People became problem solvers, and I don't think a lot of them necessarily subscribed to ChatGPT at that time, but we were still hopeful that we could become the best problem solvers possible because we all knew what the problem was in some form.
Yeah. And it was kind of amazing what did happen. I mean, when you think about it, like how quickly some people, like districts, moved in order to do certain things. And yes, it was not perfect, but the amount of problem solving that did have, like, it was in the resiliency of kids and like seeing like how some kids are turned into caretakers almost overnight for some of their students, but then at the same time trying to juggle school responsibilities. Like you said, they threw on a few more hats got thrown their way during the pandemic and how they responded.
And I think the other thing, and I apologize for interrupting, but I think the other coupling thing so far as the hats that kids decide to put on is I think there's a difference when the hat is chosen by the person wearing it versus the hat being placed on it by somebody outside their person. You know, I didn't have the choice about who my mother or father was, nor did you. I do have the choice on a daily basis of who I want to have coffee with.
Mm-hmm.
I do have a choice on a daily basis of who I want to align myself with. And as recent as this earlier this week, I was on the phone with a student at high school and saying, you know, I shared and I said, you know what? I'm checking on you. Make sure you're doing okay, because we've got some things kind of outlined. I said, but remember that if you are a skunk or you're not a skunk, if you hang around with a skunk, you're going to sooner or later, you're going to smell like one. And you know what? We had a really good conversation. We had a follow-up. And the bottom line is, I think that there are so many hats that are placed on this particular learner that were not placed there of his choice. And he's burdened down. And I'm just hopeful that he can get some light at the end of the tunnel.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, there's a great quote at the end of the book, as we kind of talk about some lessons coming out of it. But, and they talked about like how, you know, the Brian and Cena, the officer, and Sandra Bland, from the story at the beginning of the book, about how they couldn't understand. They didn't understand each other. There was a lack of understanding. And it said, because we do not know how to talk to strangers, this is the last quote of the book, because we do not know how to talk to strangers, what do we do when things go awry with strangers? We blame the stranger. And so I think, like, sometimes when we think about, you know, trying to understand each other, whether in a classroom or, and we saw that a lot, right? Like when in the classroom scenarios, if like a student wasn't understanding what we were doing, it's like, well, what, something must be wrong with the student. They need to go to special ed, right? Or they need to have, they could need services, but there was a lot of times that there wasn't a lot of look like, well, what can I do to get to understand this situation better, to understand this student better, or to, and well, even outside of school, what can we do to understand each other better too, and not have all these assumptions that we have.
And in the polarized society that we live in our country, relative to politics, I mean, we would be better served if our leaders politically would choose not to become strangers and become better listeners to one another.
Yeah.
And I won't politicize it further than that, but other than to say that I just really think that go back and feel safe, okay? When you and I are as colleagues in the math department, and whether you agree with a certain delivery or I agree with a certain delivery, when we go in front of our learners, because I think there is so much collaboration, and that's the thing I'm most proud of when I see it, their great things that they're doing at Parker High School, is the collaboration between teachers. I think that we need to be in a common front. We need to have a common perspective as we share in delivery of lessons. As teachers, our students will need to know that, you know, Teacher A and Teacher B and Teacher C, they're all on the same page and they want you to be successful.
Yeah. So do you have any lessons that you'd learn, Joe, like anything that you've done differently or you've thought about differently having read the book?
I think, you know what, I'll say honestly, I would love to have the first 5 years of my classroom experience over and thinking about, how things might have been different for some learners that I had in the classroom, because I don't think that I was necessarily in tune with listening and to the students needing, quote, a safe place. So that would be one thing for sure that I would do differently. But I do say with a level of pride that our success in the math department and our success in building experience co-curricular wise for our students at Parker. We did have a team of parents, of educators, of community persons. And our success was predicated on building a network that was communication driven. To me, that's the number one thing we can do, is we can communicate.
Nice. That's good. So, I always like that, because I always think you're trying to, you're always improving. You're always thinking, even though, you know, you're retired, you're retired, but you're still the teacher. You still got that teacher hat. It's still firmly placed on your head, I believe. So what's something that you've learned lately to help you teach better?
I think collaboration, for example, now, and I'm not, this is the first year now, that I'm not doing anything specifically teaching based. However, I'm doing a lot of stuff that's, as you know, that track and field has been one of my passions forever. And I've used Google Meet as a conduit to communicate with people that are in the same boat that I am, and they're at the same juncture in the career. Mm-hmm. So I think the one thing that, you know, I would say that I'm much, much, much better at sharing and collaborating, because when, you know, for example, if I go to talk to a coach and he or she is world acclaimed or whatever, I would have never, ever thought about getting in a dialogue. And all of a sudden, there's a gentleman in California by the name of Brian Fitzgerald, and he's truly one of the most successful high school coaches in the nation. And now he's coaching at a community college. But the bottom line is, he and I last year forged a relationship, and we share so much information and video. And to me, every day is a new opportunity to learn every day. I mean, and I've learned that I don't want to carpet my house again in my lifetime, because
just a big geometry problem, Joe. Come on now.
Yep. It's a space management problem, I can tell you that. And what I found out is that things that are in your rooms, they all need to come out of the room when they're going to put carpet down.
Yeah.
So, yeah. but on a serious note, I think the number one thing is that I think I've learned of late is don't be afraid to talk to people, because there was a time, and now, and I've developed a relationship with Brian Fitzgerald post talking to strangers. There was a time that I would have felt that he was a person I couldn't approach, because I know that doesn't sound appropriate. I would have been probably reluctant to approach him. And I just said, you know what? I'm going to pick up the phone, and I texted him, and then I sent him an email, and now we meet. And the same thing with this gentleman in Plainfield, Illinois, which is the northern Chicago suburb. And he's doing some things that I was really interested in. I said, you know what? That's a 2-hour drive down. I think I can probably make a 2-hour drive down. So I've made 3 visits to persons that, you know, have knowledge of information that I'm passionate about.
That's awesome. I mean, yeah, like I remember that when I was doing my doctoral work, and like, oh, I saw someone's like, you know, paper or something like that. And I'm like, oh my gosh, it'd be so great to talk to them. Like, well, a lot of times they'd be like, send them an email, and they'd be like, I'd love to talk to you about this stuff. Like, I love it. Like this is my passion, exactly. You know? And like, oh, that's odd. I would love to do that too. And I remember, you know, in this, you'd recognize his name. So, up in Eau Claire or in Altoona, my speech teacher was named Mouse Bennett. I don't know if you know, he was a coach. I think he was a basketball coach for Eau Claire Memorial back in the day. Well, he was friends with Dick Bennett.
Yep. And Mouse Bennett was Jack Bennett, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah. And so he was my, and we were giving a speech, and I like, man, and I just talked about how much I love UW Green Bay basketball and Dick Bennett and his son, Tony Bennett, who's now, you know, a national champion in Virginia. And I'm like, oh man, I'd love to, like, cause we had to interview somebody, and I'm like, oh, it'd be cool to interview him. And like, he's like, I know him. You want to call him? And I'm like, you could interview him. I'm sure he would. He'd do it. And it's like, oh my God. And like, that was like the most like that I like touching, almost like, you know, fame or whatever. Like that's a guy I see on Sports Center and stuff like that. And the fact that, you know, a teacher like got me to do that. Like, I don't know. It's just one of those things where it's like communicate, like let's talk to each other about passions and stuff. And like, oh man, that was the greatest thing ever. And the fact that a teacher like showed me like, hey, just reach out and let's do it. We can do that. That's not how that we're human. We're all human.
Yep. And you know, and often we pick up my wife and I pick up our grandchildren, you know, what'd you do at school today? We don't frame that. We don't put that question, because too many times it just, So now we have this conversation. I said, well, what was your wow moment at school today? What was something that really kind of lit your fire and made you feel good? You know, and it just, I don't know. Because even, and my grandson, as recent as 2 days ago when I picked him up, you know, and we had played chess the day before, and I'd beaten him, and because his younger brother got involved and distracted him some sort. So it gave me an advantage, and I beat him. It had been a while. So I said, well, what was your wow moment? And he says, well, you know, he says, I was beating Miss James at 24 today. And then I said, oh, that's good that, you know, you could. And he said, well, I said, but, you know, how are you feeling about the chess thing? And he said, well, you know, he says, I'm still kind of mad about that. The Decker was around and he interrupted our chess game. So the point that I want to make is that I just think on all levels, the more we communicate with one another, whether it be you with Mouse Bennett of the Eau Claire Memorial Old Abe's.
There you go. Yeah.
I know it was Jack Bennett, and because I was in Beloit at the time, and there was a huge rivalry between the Purple Knights and the Old Abe's because they both wore purple and white.
Yeah.
So there you go. But anyways, I just think the more that, you know, whether it be familial relationships or neighbor relationship. Here's an example. I have my knee done. Okay. So now I have my knee done in September 12th. I didn't want to do it on 9/11. That would not have been a good date. I didn't think to do it for a knee replacement. So at any rate, our neighbor, now we had all kinds of projects that was going on, and our neighbor just, and their head mount, because I'd always working. There wasn't a real whole lot of dialogue between the two of us. And now he and I have kind of forged a friendship, and he's done multiple things for us. That's why I think the world becomes a better place when we talk to one another.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, Joe, thank you so much for your time. I appreciate this.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity to be on, and I don't know that it was driven in the manner that you had wanted, but.
No, I love it.
It was all right.
It's great. Well, thank you so much for your time. I just, always thankful to have an excuse to talk to you and glad that I get a chance to share.
Yeah. All right. Thank you, Joel.
All right. There it is. There's my conversation with Joe Dye. Again, we talked about the book, Talking to Strangers, What We Should Know About the People We Don't Know. If you're looking for a link to go purchase the book and you want to support independent bookstores, I'll have a link to bookshop.org on my website, and you can go to the show notes at amazonplanet.com/episode89. Wow, we're almost to 100. Yep, 89. So anyway, you can go there. You can check out the links. I also got links to some of those other episodes we mentioned at the beginning of the podcast. Anything else that I think is relevant, I'll put them in the show notes. If you're looking for ways to support the podcast, if you like what you hear, share it. Share the podcast. Share it with somebody. Have them listen to it. Or you can subscribe, rate, and review, all that good stuff that you would normally do for other podcasts. But I think the sharing is good, right? If you think this is good, share it. And if you want, you can CC, if you email it to somebody, CC me on the email, joel@amazonplanet.com. That'd be fun, right? Just to see that other people are sharing it. And I mean, we see people are listening, but I just wonder who's doing the listening, right? So that's kind of fun to see who's finding the value and value enough to even to share it. So I appreciate everyone out there that is supporting the podcast, that is listening, that's sharing, that is talking about it, because this is kind of fun to get to do, and just thankful that people are still out there listening to it. And again, even if there's only just a few people listening to it, it's also just fun to have these conversations and to talk about good books. So anyway, all right, that is about all I have for this episode of the podcast. Again, we talked about sharing, we talked about subscribe, rate, and review, we talked about, hey, if you want to join the email list, you can go to amazonplanet.com/episode89, and that would be the show notes, but then you can also just go to amazonplanet.com and then find the little join the email list buttons. You can always do that. Finally, thank you for spending time on Amazon Planet. Thanks to Joe Dye for sharing his time and expertise. Thanks to Malcolm Gladwell for putting together an awesome book. Thanks to Matt Mifflin for the music in this episode. And finally, thank you to all of you out there learning to teach better and be the good in the world by investing in the lives of others. This world is a better place because you have decided to use the gifts you have been given to serve others. Thank you for all that you do. Peace.